All right, this next question is from the audience, and we'll start with Mr. Scripps and a minute. Actually, no, 2 minutes, I think, on this one. What do you plan to do to create the jobs that we need here in Northern Michigan?
Yeah, that's great, and I'm glad you gave me 2 minutes. So I think there's a number of things that we can and should be doing. One is rebuilding our infrastructure and also working to modernize our infrastructure for the 21st century. I mean, it's no secret that our roads and bridges need a lot of work, and that's important here in Northwest Michigan in terms of getting our agricultural products and manufactured goods out and our tourists in. And so that's got to be something we're focusing on because it helps our economy, but it also puts people to work building out the infrastructure. It was mentioned during the county commission section that, you know, focusing on things like high-speed internet and the ability to have a cell phone conversation in Leelanau County without worrying about dropping are two additional pieces. And also, you know, extending natural gas pipelines to serve rural communities. One of the challenges in building affordable housing is that even if you can get all the way through the process, sometimes, you know, the prospect of heating the place with propane just destroys the economics. And it makes it more challenging to develop some of the workforce housing projects that we all know that we need in this county. So those are things where building out the infrastructure creates jobs, but also creates the framework for the private sector to then invest on top of. And that's a priority. I'd love to see us leveraging our local strengths in agriculture and clean energy and in advanced manufacturing, tourism, obviously, to continue to create jobs in those sectors. And then I think it also, you know, we need folks who understand that we need to support entrepreneurs and unlock innovation and create the industries and the jobs of the future while also supporting the small businesses that make our communities as vibrant as they are. And that's, you know, it's not one thing or the other. It's really that you've got to do it all and do it in a way that works in partnership between the public sector and the folks who are making those private sector investments. And I think in both the public and private sector, I've worked to do that. And I think that's the sort of job creation agenda that I'd bring as state representative.
Mr. Vanderwall.
Thank you. As a small business owner, I think it's very important that we understand what it takes to run a business. And it's extremely important right now in Michigan that we continue to move on a forward process to make sure that we have good roads. We have opportunities to make sure that the businesses can get their products to market quickly. We also need to make sure that we understand that if we continue to put more and more regulations and more burden on top of the small business owner or the large owners, that we continue to push them away. And every time that those regulations come down, they end up cutting help or they cannot grow to the point where they need to grow. We're in a point in time right now that our economy is doing extremely well, but we're falling behind on making sure that we have the technology to help that. But we've been working very hard. As you can see right now, our unemployment rate in the state of Michigan is below 5%. It's been the greatest that it's been in years. We want to continue to make sure that we work very hard that unemployment rate stays down, because jobs equals paychecks, paychecks equals progress, and that's what we need to do in the 101st.
Thank you.
Thank you. We had a number of questions or inquiries talking about robocalls, talking about mailers, and I'd like to give you guys an opportunity to discuss those. For instance, Tom Hagen, asked about the robocalls, about your proposal to increase salaries, and I found a couple that I wanted to discuss with you. And if you want more time, rebuttal time to discuss others that you feel have been directed at you that need some explanation. We all know we can believe everything that in print. So if you got a mailer, I'm sure it's all true, right? Okay, from a print guy. So I have separate questions, and to Mr. I'll start with Mr. Vanderwall because that's you need to start this one. A Michigan Democratic Party flyer states that while a Mason County commissioner, you quote, raised fees and gave himself a 300% pay increase. Would you like an opportunity to explain what you actually voted for?
Absolutely. I really, number one, appreciate you bringing that up. It's always very interesting when you have an opponent and a party that decide that they want to basically run on the fuzzy edge of reality and truth. As a county commissioner and as a group of commissioners at the time, we had 10, we made a decision that we felt it was unfair to our constituents that we had full health benefits for a part-time job. So as a county board, we voted to eliminate health benefits. We had a base salary that we increased a little bit. However, we cut everything else, and I'm going to go into a little math so that we understand math, and it, you figure out the 300% because I haven't got it yet. But my benefit package with the Mason County Board of Commissioners was almost $22,000. And we voted to take out benefits and give us a base salary, and that base salary was less than $12,000. So when you do the math, I think that I saved thousands of dollars, but somehow I gave myself 300% raise, which is really not truthful. And you know what? When you hear things like that and they want to scarf through and they forget one side of the story and say, oh, you increased your base pay a little bit, that's the real story. And that's the real math, and I don't think that adds up to 300%.
Thank you. And like I said, if you guys want more. Yeah, I got a different one for you, Dan,
can
but
I,
if you want
to respond
talk
to that, yeah, because
sure.
It doesn't add up to 300%. It adds up to 361%. Because when you came in, your salary was about $3,000, and then it went up to somewhere between 11 and 12. And, you know, you said that when you started that your compensation package was 22,000, but, you know, the other person who was elected that year, Sue Bowes, declined to take some of those health insurance benefits because she didn't think it was right. And her total compensation was 5,100 when yours was 22,000. And there have been folks like John Fellows, who's a member of the Police Pension Board in Ludington, who has said, I can't afford you. And conservative bloggers like Ludington Citizen, who said that you've got to acknowledge that earlier in your career, you decided that your own economic health, and I'm quoting here, was more important than the people you represent. The Democrats have a valid point in claiming you have an aficionado of taxpayer chocolates. And one of your fellow commissioners, Mary Nichols, actually voted against the increase, saying that it was an extraordinary amount and noting that Manistee County Commission, with no health insurance, just made $5,400 a year, less than half of the amount that you increased your salary when you increased it 361%. I think that's, I mean, if you really wanted to do what was in the public interest for a part-time job, you didn't have to take the health benefits. You didn't have to take a $22,000 compensation package. And I think when you look at how that contrasts with my record, where I voted to cut my own pay by 10%, $8,000 a year, and voted to end lifetime health care for lawmakers, it's resulting in more than $5 million in savings to taxpayers. I think those are very different approaches to public service.
Gotta slow her down, guys. And we allowed more than the 30 seconds. That's, you know, I didn't make that clear. So this is a very important topic, and I want to make sure you guys both have an opportunity to explain your thoughts on this. Now, Kurt, do you want to?
I think it's really interesting that we're in this situation. When I walked in there, I will tell you again, this isn't the whole truth that goes in there, and that's why we made the change to make it equal to each and every commissioner that went in there. When I walked in, because of my situation, I was entitled to those benefits and that benefit package. Unfortunately, the difference was that two of our commissioners were not entitled to that, and we felt it was wrong. And that's why we changed it, because it was not fair to our constituents and the people that live in our district to pay for that.
Thank you. Ms. Scripps, a Michigan Republican Party flyer states that you voted for, quote, unlimited lifetime health care benefits for former state lawmakers costing Michigan families billions of dollars. Would you like an opportunity to explain that vote?
This one's my favorite. Actually, today, the Center for Michigan, it's a nonpartisan independent group. They publish Bridge Magazine, and they've got what's called the Michigan Truth Squad, and they sort of fact check claims like this. And they said in that case that it was a foul. And They said about that particular claim that it goes from stretching the truth to snapping it, setting it on fire, and then running it over with a pickup truck. So, the claim that is being made was described as truly Orwellian, the sort of claim that explains why voters distrust politicians. And they go on to say Scripps voted for unlimited lifetime health care benefits for former state lawmakers is not only wrong, Scripps did the exact opposite. And so I'd encourage you, go to Fact Check or go to the Center for Michigan's Michigan Truth Squad under Bridge Magazine. You can read all of this yourself. But this is one that, you know, I felt was so far out of bounds because, you know, it's not. I mean, the record is clear. That vote passed by 103-1, and it was co-sponsored by people like our Lieutenant Governor, Brian Kelly, our State Senator, Darwin Boer, Justin Amash, the very conservative Tea Party congressman from the Grand Rapids area, and on down the line. And I was happy to join 102 of my colleagues in voting to end lifetime health care, not to protect it.
Thank you. Kurt?
All right, we will go to Mr. Scripps first. How about a minute for this question? What are some examples of tax reforms you'd support if sent to Lansing?
Yeah, I think one of the big things is looking at sort of who pays for the sort of state government. And what I'm concerned about is today, and increasingly over the last 6 years, the burden of that has fallen onto middle-class families and folks who are working, often scraping to get by. You look at things like the elimination of the earned income tax credit and only partial replacement. That's for folks who are working their way out of poverty and into the middle class and putting up additional roadblocks. You look at the tax on senior pensions and another case of after sort of people making their long-term plans for their retirement, needing to go back and find additional money to send to Lansing. And I think it's gotten skewed. I think that there has been in the last 6 years a pretty massive tax shift onto the backs of ordinary citizens and middle-class families. And I think that as somebody representing this district, seeing people who are struggling, seeing retired people who are counting on not having that additional tax imposed, that's one thing I'd like to address.
Mr. Vanderwall.
Thank you. Once again, I think that we need to understand that it's extremely important that we have the proper tax formula throughout all workers, throughout all corporations, to make sure that each one pays the equal amount that helps fund the state of Michigan. We need to continue to work very hard that those funding models are continually caressed, modeled so that not everybody is paying more or somebody's paying less, that we're all paying equal. My concern right now is that we went through a period of time in the 2006, 7, 8, 9, and 10 that basically crushed us as a state. We had overtaxed our employers, our businesses. We had a mass exodus to other states around us. We're finally on the right track that we're back to growing our businesses, and we can't continue to pass on more. If I could have a little bit more time, I'd appreciate it, that we continue to throw another tax bracket or another tax onto our employers that basically are keeping us where we need to be. I think all of us live in this area. There's a lot of us that have businesses that if we don't have people that come and visit that don't have money, they don't spend it here. And if we lose that, what does that do to you that are not going to be around or are only seasonal? So we need to be very careful on saying that we're going to cut taxes here and put them back onto the backs of somebody else, which is our corporations, our small businesses, because we'll lose our economic edge and we can't afford that.
Do you have a follow-up, Mr. Scripps?
We're blessed in this county to have very active political parties. And next, I would like representatives of our party, starting with Betsy Johnson. She has a question she would like to pose of Mr. Vanderwall. Knowing these two individuals coming up, I wish you both luck.
Thank you.
But I do have my reading glasses, so just in case.
Mr. 2 minutes on this, I'm sorry.
Not 2 minutes for my question, just the answer.
Why do you allow an organization outside this district to continue making robocalls and sending flyers misrepresenting Dan's record? Shouldn't you make them stop to preserve your personal integrity?
Well, that's very interesting because there's sometimes that, and I appreciate the question, and I think we all should know this because my opponent's going to say the same thing when he has an opportunity to. Because we both got the same email from a gentleman from this area not more than a week ago, and I'm sure that Dan remembers it. But we must remember, and he says to me, well, both of you were at my doorstep.
One more recently.
Yeah. And then he said, and then I had a phone call from your opponent, Kurt, and it was from Georgia. You know, there's a lot of times I don't know where those calls come from. They come from organizations that fall in behind under the political makeup that our government has allowed, and they make these phone calls on behalf of us, and we don't know that they're there. We don't know that they're coming out. Number one, and it's not legal for us to know that they're coming out because they can't tell us that. So there's flyers that come out that unfortunately, I didn't know anything about. If it doesn't come from my party, or I shouldn't say my party, but my political committee, myself. And a lot of them do state. I mean, we can go back and we can talk about the other one that came through. But unfortunately, those robocalls that come, if you see they're out of the area, I wouldn't answer them. You know, unfortunately, if you see it came from Kurt Vanderwall, please answer it because I'm sure I have a great message for you. But that came from me. And then you know it's the truth. Because what I'm going to tell you is I'm a guy of integrity. And when I speak and it comes from my committee, those are true statements. And they aren't false. And I want you to understand that.
Thank you. Would you like to all speak on that 30 seconds?
Yeah. What Kurt is saying is true, that we don't often know that what others are saying on our behalf or against each other. But to me, that's a problem. That's one of the biggest problems that's facing our democracy, is that there is unlimited, often untraceable, dollars flowing into these races. And I think it corrupts it. I think it drowns out local voices, and it's an issue. And when I previously served, we worked to create at least disclosure on some of these things so that you would know who was behind it. Often with the robocalls, we'll have no idea until months after the election, if ever. And that's a problem. It's a problem we've got to fix.
Thank you. Mr. Eric Lind, if you could come up, please. I think you're the former chair of the Republican Party in the county. Is that retired?
Yes. Mr. Scripps, nice to see you again. 2 years ago, taxation of pension income was a hot topic. What is your position on the taxation of pension income?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. It is good to see you. This is actually is probably easier than some of the questions that you asked when you'd show up at coffee hour. So I appreciate it, you taking it easy on me.
We're going to have to find a new place.
Right.
Silver Tree's
I know,
gone.
Exactly. We've been doing them at the old Kajaris Bridge, Redheads. But,
oh, okay.
But we'll figure it out. But I appreciate the question. I do oppose the shift to begin taxing for the first time some of the pension income that had not previously been taxed. I think for folks who had done their financial planning looking into retirement and made the calculations about when they could afford and what they were going to be living on, to have sort of a government come in and change the rules after they were set, put a lot of people in a really hard place. And I don't, you know, nobody likes to increase taxes on anybody, but to do that, I thought was exactly the wrong direction for our state to go, and if I had the chance, I'd vote to undo it.
Would you undo it for all forms of retirement income or just pension income?
I want to be careful just in thinking about sort of how this plays out. I know that in some of the certainly in some of the other forms that they're, you know, that you set them up where you're either paying tax at the beginning when you're making the investments into the retirement accounts, or you choose to pay the tax when they're coming out. And so I would be I wouldn't want to sort of paint with too broad a brush if you had sort of chosen to take tax advantages earlier on, knowing that you were going to pay tax on the income when it was coming out, so that basically honoring the rules that we thought that were in place when we made the decisions.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Vanderwall.
I would like to respond a little bit on that. First off, I appreciate that question. I think that he was trying to slip off a little bit on the answer. First off, I feel that it's very important that everybody is treated fairly. So no matter what your pension or your retirement system is, it either needs to be taxed the same way or it should be the same way the other way. So if there is no tax, then your 401k that most of us have shouldn't be taxed either. It needs to be fair to each and every one of us as folks here in the 101st in the state of Michigan.
Thank you.
All right, we'll start with Mr. Scripps on this question. And I've seen a couple questions from the audience about school funding. So my question is that Proposal A passed 20 years ago. It radically changed how school funding worked in the state. How is that funding model working these days?
Not great, particularly locally. I think that we see in northern Michigan some of the real shortcomings of the school funding model under Proposal A, to the point that, you know, 22 years after Proposal A passed, we've still got this massive disparity in school funding between some downstate districts that are at the very top of the funding formula and too many local districts who are trapped right at the bottom with nothing that they can do about it. When I was in the House before, we founded the Bipartisan School Equity Caucus, working across the aisle, reaching out to a guy named Representative Moore, who represented the Farwell area, and two others on the Republican side, Jeff Hansen, who is currently in the state Senate to the south of us, and Wayne Schmidt, who's in the state Senate representing the Traverse City area, and two others on the Democratic side as well, to try and force through some changes so that we could address the inequality in school funding to make sure that our local kids get the same opportunities as kids downstate. We've got a lot more work to do along those lines because it's a formula that's not working, and it's not working for our kids.
Mr. Vanderwall.
Thank you. Well, first off, I want to say, being a son of parents that were educators, I understand where our teachers and where our administrators and some of the parents are feeling the frustration. I also want to make clear that this year, the state of Michigan has budgeted a record budget of almost $13 billion for education. However, we still have a major concern because we have districts in the South that aren't, and we're up in the north and we're not being equally funded. We need to make sure that we continue to work very hard, and we're trying to catch that up, but it's at a slow pace. But we need to work very hard to make sure that we get the funding for the downstate schools just as much as the other. But I also want to add that my opponent started out this evening and said that he never voted to cut school funding for students.
That is not true.
That is not true. You cut $154 from the students.
That's not true.
It's glad that you're interrupting me.
I'll walk you
me.
Through the math.
No, that's all right. I have it.
But hold on. The minute's up, but would you like
right, but
more
I think
time?
It's very important that you understand that it was $154 cut per student at the worst time of the year when they had to lay off teachers because of that cut, because it came unknown. And he also voted to send $70 million to the richest districts and no money to our districts, and that's wrong.
Response.
So this is I'm glad this came up because you're just not right on this. You're wrong. You can go back and look at the 2009 budget when it was in. When the House version came up, it didn't include any cuts, and I voted for it, as did 106 of my colleagues. It passed 107-3. When the final version came up, it cut school funding by $165 per pupil, and I voted against it because I have voted against every single cut to education when I was in. In 2010, there was an increase of $11 per pupil. You can look it up. And we added an equity component so that the schools at the bottom got $20 and the schools at the top got $10. It was an increase of $11 per pupil that I voted for, and I was proud to vote for it. I have voted against every single cut to education during my time in the House, and if you don't understand that, you should do a little more research.
Do you have a follow-up question, sir?
Yes, I do. Chasing something that we'll never catch up with, and that's called the Teachers Retirement Fund. Now, I know teachers are good people. My wife was a teacher. My daughter's a teacher. My daughter-in-law is a teacher. Aunts and uncles have been teachers. That's a wonderful thing. But something must be done to address the teacher's pension. We need to, in my judgment, move younger people onto a 401k plan. And
sir, I'm sorry. What is your question?
My question is, what's your proposal for solving this dilemma? Are we going to continue to go on to take almost 40% of the money we pay per student for teachers' retirement funds, or can we devise a way to lessen the impact of this?
And I'm glad it came up. I had it down as a question also. So let's turn into a. And I think Mr. Vanderwall would start that. My question, same thing. Basically, the public school retirement system, including health care, now consumes 36% of all school payroll costs incurred by local districts. Should the state of Michigan be picking up a larger share of funds needed to keep the public school retirement system functioning? What is the solution here?
Well, currently, at the end of each year, we've been putting a fair amount of change into the coffers.
Can we go? Is this going to take 2 minutes, you guys? You think?
I don't think so.
1 minute? Good deal. Thank you.
We do know that we have a major problem in that pension, and we know that we've got to address that. Each year we've put a lot of money in there to help pay down some of that debt. Unfortunately, folks, we've got $57 billion in debt right now in the school teacher pension. That if we have a huge number of teachers that decide to leave, I don't know the state can take care of that right now. So it is going to be a major point of contention that we're going to have to work very diligently when we get into Lansing. We're going to have to come up with real sound ideas that we can make sure that we honor our obligation to those folks, but we need to make sure that we work hard in the future so that that burden doesn't fall onto our children, because that's where we're going. If we continue to work the way we're heading, this debt is going to fall back onto our children, and where does that go? So the thing comes down is we're going to have to get into Lansing, we're going to have to sit down, we're going to have to work those details out to head into the future. But I feel very strongly that we need to honor what we agreed to.
Thank you, Mr. Vanderwall. Mr. Scripps?
I don't disagree with much of what was just said. Clearly, we need to honor the obligations and commitments that we've made to those who spent their lives educating our kids and are now in retirement. But there is an issue, and it's that we're spending an increasing share of the dollars that are supposed to go into classrooms on folks who have retired. And that, I think, is a challenge that needs to be addressed. I think the number you said was 36%. That's bought down a little bit by the state, but it's still well over 25%, or well over 20%, one out of every $5, going not to the classrooms to educate kids today, but going back into the pension obligations of former teachers. So I think, you know, looking at that, whether the state takes an increasing share to free up those dollars to go into the classrooms for education for our kids, I think would go a long way. But we've got to do it in a way that honors the commitments, but ultimately sort of shows that education is the priority that we say it is.
Thank you. Guy's good with that. I've got the next question. I have separate questions for both of you, so this will be a minute, and then, of course, if you need rebuttal, please let us know. I believe we start with Mr. Scripps. These are somewhat related, but after losing your House seat, I think the year is 2010, you moved to Washington, became an environmental lawyer. Some would say you became an environmental lobbyist. I'll let you address that. But then you moved back to the district, some would say to run for office. That's kind of an open-ended question. Are you a resident of Washington, or are you a resident of Northport?
I'm very happily a resident of Northport, and I love it. So we did. We left in early 2011. I went back to the firm that I had previously worked for, and had the opportunity to work as an energy lawyer on some of the biggest projects in the world. We advised on some of the work that went into the first liquefied natural gas export terminal in the U.S., worked on one of the largest solar arrays in North America, and helped create the first green bank in a state that was in the state of Connecticut. And you know, that, I think, gave me a great perspective, but ultimately wanted to be closer to family, closer to home, and we moved back to Michigan about 4 years ago where I've been working with clean energy businesses as they're working to create new markets and new technologies. We knew that when our oldest son, Jack, was going to start school, that we wanted to be back home. And so we moved back the summer before he started kindergarten. He's now a first grader at Northport School. We've got Nickel in the Children's Center, and we love being residents of Leelanau County.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Vanderwall, did you want to say anything in that about the rebuttal?
I think that it's extremely important to know that I've never moved. I've been in this area. When I moved here, I stayed here. I'm entwined. I know what's been going on in this district and in my community for the last 33 years. I've never taken that opportunity to go make more money and move out of the area. I have decided to stay here and take care of my family, make the changes that we needed to make, and stay here and not chase that dollar and then come back to run for office. I feel very important that I am your voice, that I'm honest, and that I have integrity, and that I should be your state representative.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. For Mr. Vanderwall, you own and operate a business in Ludington. Yet, if elected, people will expect you to represent them full-time in Lansing. Do you plan on retaining your business? What is your priority?
That's a great question. I appreciate it. Well, first off, we've already made changes in my business. We must remember that I am married, and my wife is very active in that business currently. I've had a manager in place for 7 years who has taken on more job responsibility. We moved another person into the office, and I have all the hopes in the world that I have one of my three children that decides to come and become active in the business. And I'm hoping that they'll take over the business and allow Dad to work in Lansing and come home and guide them a little bit.
Thank you. You all set?
Thank you. All right. The next question, we'll start with Mr. Vanderwall. And I have about a half dozen questions all about Line 5, which is the oil pipeline run by Enbridge under the Straits of Mackinac. And I think this question from the audience kind of sums up the concerns here, and let's give 2 minutes for this question. But what will you do to help preserve the quality of our water in northern Michigan? Mr. Vanderwall.
Well, thank you. First off, I want to say that protection of our Great Lakes and our environment is the greatest concern I have. It's extremely important. I've been painted by other people that I'm a lake killer, that I'm not for the environment. That's totally untrue. I work very hard. I'm very active in the environment, and I think it's extremely important. I think we need to understand that Line 5 is the most scrutinized and tested line in this nation. It was tested 4 times in 2015. However, how many of us knew that? We need to make sure that line, those reports, those testings are more transparent. Let's talk economics of what happens if Line 5 disappears. We have 70 to 80% of the propane that heats northern Michigan and the UP that comes from Line 5. Right now they're saying at a minimum those gas prices will go up 40%. That's an economic hardship on people that are on fixed incomes that live in rural areas, especially when you get into the north up here or you get into the UP. We can't put that burden on those people. We also have to make sure that those small communities that receive part of the $22.5 million from tax revenue from Line 5 that would disappear, what would happen to those small communities where that line comes in and out? We need to make sure that you understand there's 250 high-paying jobs in those communities throughout the whole line from the top to the bottom that are in this state. We need to make sure that we continue to make sure that pipeline is safe. It's tested regularly, the transparency is there, and if there is an issue with that line, it needs to be shut down immediately, and anything that's an issue, it's taken care of before it ever reopens.
Mr. Scripps.
Yeah, this is one of the big issues that I think distinguish my opponent and myself, because I've been very clear and forceful on this for a long time. I think that Line 5 has outlived its usefulness. It's a 63-year-old pipeline that was built for 50 years. We know that on Line 5 itself, they've had a number of leaks, including one that spilled 200,000 200,000 gallons of oil flooded a marshland in the western UP that Enbridge, the company that owns Line 5, a Canadian pipeline company, is responsible for the spill in the Kalamazoo River area. That's the largest inland oil spill in American history. And if you think about what that would look like in the Straits, where the currents are stronger than they are at Niagara Falls, where modeling from the University of Michigan has shown that oil could wash up on Leelanau County shores. That is a devastating economic impact to our Great Lakes fishery, a $7 billion economic driver in northern Michigan, to our tourism economy, and probably at least as important to our quality of life and to the health of the Great Lakes. And I don't think that is a risk that we should be taking. In terms of it being tested and whether there are any problems, we know because of Enbridge's own admission that they are out of compliance with the terms of the easement granted by the people of Michigan for them to run that pipeline along the bottomlands of the Straits. We know that they are violating the contract that they've got with the state of Michigan. And this is because they told us when they went back and said, we want to try and fix it. It's a 63-year-old pipeline. We know it is in poor condition. We know that it's been responsible for leaks. And we know that the company behind it is responsible here in Michigan for the largest inland oil spill in U.S. history. We cannot continue to roll the dice with a 63-year-old pipeline that could devastate our economy and our quality of life if and when it ruptures.
Would you like a rebuttal, Mr. Van Hoorn?
Absolutely. First off, I want to make sure I'm a little confused. I searched high and low because he mentioned this at our last debate. There is nothing in public record in the state of Michigan on any place, any site that I can find that there was any spill from Line 5. So I'd like to know where that is so that I can really investigate that. We also need to know that we're not pushing the same liquid through pipes. The Enbridge pipe that burst in Kalamazoo was completely different, and it was a human error that caused that major spill. We have to understand that the liquid that runs through ours is a light liquid with a lot of gas through that, and we have to understand that.
Okay, your time is up.
Guys set on that? Good deal. We had one question from the audience. What will each of you do to change the DNR to avoid future Flint water crisis? I had a very similar, more open-ended question. This would start with Mr. Scripps. Can you explain, in your view, what happened to cause a Flint water crisis, and how can we avoid that in the future?
Yeah, we started this debate with a question on the Grand Rapids Veterans Home and how that was a case where, because we wanted to save some money in the short term, we are chronically mistreating our veterans. And it comes from a philosophy of government that's focused on either an ideological agenda or just, you know, that we're going to treat everything like a balance sheet and ignore the people and families and human faces behind those numbers. I think that's the wrong approach. And I think that, you know, there's more than enough blame to go around for Flint. But I think it was a failure of government to put people first, to make decisions in the best interests of the people that they're supposed to serve instead of what looks best on a short-term balance sheet. And you saw that in the decision to switch to the Flint River, which just amazed anybody who knows Flint because of the corrosive nature of that GM almost immediately went off of it because the water was corroding their parts. And then the decision, you know, for $150 a day not to treat the water, which ultimately led to the corrosion of the lead pipes and the poisoning of an American city in 2015. And I think, you know, that philosophy that we're just going to look at balance sheets and we're going to ignore the costs is the most dangerous thing out there, and the human costs. And had we paid attention, I think that we could have, and we obviously needed to avoid this. So I'm looking at how do we build a state government that puts people first again and that focuses on serving the people that we're sent there to represent. And I think if we do that, if we really do that, we can make sure that nothing like Flint ever happens again. The other piece is that I think that Flint has unmasked that, you know, what happened largely has happened, or in a lot of cases is still happening. So I think the job for anybody running for this office is, what are the solutions? What are the solutions for Flint in terms of providing the care, but also what are the solutions for the state of Michigan in making sure that we're addressing our infrastructure issues in a way that makes sure that that never happens anywhere else again?
Mr. Vander?
Yeah, how much time do I have?
2 minutes.
Two minutes, yeah. Thank you.
Two minutes, I'm sorry.
First off, what happened in Flint was a tragedy. And I think that all of us understand that what happened to those families, that are still happening to those families, is terrible, and we're going to live with it for years and years to come. What that brought to light is, what are we going to do in our communities locally? What do we need to make sure? Because we don't want this to happen here. So we need to make sure that we do several things. First is, we need to make sure there's proper maintenance on the lines. Anytime there's anything that goes on with those lines, we need to make sure there's proper testing. We need to make sure that when there's road construction and we have that opportunity to remove the and change the infrastructure of those old lead pipes to a home, we need to help make sure that takes place so that this could never happen again. But it ultimately comes down that we need to do what's right for the people, that it doesn't happen again, that we don't allow it to happen again. And what we need to do is make sure that we put people first, make sure that what we learned is a lesson that's learned, and we move forward in the future.
Thank you.
We'll start with Mr. Vanderwall, a minute for this question. Last month, the State Board of Education approved a set of voluntary guidelines related to how schools should treat transgender students. Among the recommendations were that students should be able to use the bathroom of the gender they identify with, and that schools should ask students first if they want the school to notify their parents that they are transgender. Was this an appropriate step to take, and why?
Great question. Now we get to find out what we're made of and who we are. I have a great concern with that, and I think we need to put our children first. We need to make sure that allowing this to happen in the public school system has the potential to further erode our system, our public education. We need to understand that if we need to put a facility for transgender children to use, that's fine. But to allow them to use the same facility that other students are using of the sex that they're continuing to identify with is concerning. It also bothers me when a school system or a school board, such as the state school board, makes a decision that they can no longer tell the parent that their child isn't identifying who they are, and that bothers me. Once again, that takes any parental control, any parental direction. It takes it away, and it allows our students or allows our schools to go down a path that I'm concerned with.
Mr. Scripps.
I think this is an easy issue to demagogue on or to fearmonger, and that is deeply troubling to me, because I think ultimately this is about, you know, the bullying that some of these kids face, about the dignity to live out who they are as individuals. And I think that needs to be respected by all of us who would seek public office. I also think that there is a danger in going down and following the path that some other states have taken, North Carolina probably being most notable, where after they did something very similar to repealing or to blocking that, they lost huge amounts of investment. The NCAA tournament, NBA All-Star game, NASCAR races, billions and billions of dollars of economic activity, because people in America today don't want to do business with people who discriminate. And for us to send a signal that the discrimination is fine with us, I think would be the wrong decision morally, and certainly would be the wrong decision economically.
Would you like a rebuttal?
Just briefly, I didn't say anything about discrimination. I think that you're throwing that in there. We need to be very careful with that. However, I will tell you that when I'm knocking on doors, this is a huge concern to the parents when I knock on the doors. And concerned enough that they say that if this goes through, that they'll poll their students. And that bothers me, because what are we going to do if that really happens? We have an issue. And we need to be very careful in how we address that. And I just want everybody to understand that I don't have an issue with that. I'm just very concerned that if we make that choice to do that, I don't feel that that's right, and I don't think that should be forced on the parents.
Time flies. Been here a little over an hour, and I hate to outwear our welcome here. So I would like this to be our final question, and so it'll also serve as your closing remarks. Mm-hmm. We'll double up on this, and let me start with something that Irma Bombeck said. It is fast approaching the point where I don't want to elect anyone stupid enough to want the job.
Thanks,
that
Alan.
In mind, why are you guys running for State House? And we'll start, I believe, let me see here, with Mr. Vanderwall, I believe.
And how long do we have? Like
two
10
minutes.
Minutes?
Yeah, take 2 minutes. Yeah.
Well, till the lights are turned off.
Yeah, till they kick us out. Till Bonnie comes out and kicks us out.
All right. Well, very briefly, the reason I'm running for state representative is I feel very close to the district. I truly feel that I will represent you and bring your values to Lansing. I feel I'm not that hot shot guy that's going to try to run down there and do things all differently. I'm the gentleman that's going to go down, take your views, your values, your ideas to Lansing. I want to make sure that everybody understands that I'm not abusing the system. We talked about vacations and flyers that my opponent put out. Those were educational bipartisan conferences that I was sent to, which every one of the commissioners that represents you has an opportunity to go to. We need to understand that I'm here to work for you. I am very concerned about our district. Once again, I'm somebody that has been here for 33 years, very connected. I haven't moved in and out of the district. I've stayed here. I'm not a lawyer. I'm a small business owner that feels it's very important to instill those values in Lansing that will create jobs, create an environment that allows our children to stay here, creates an environment that we all prosper, that we enjoy this beauty that we have, which we call Lake Michigan, Glen Arbor, Sleeping Bear Dunes. I mean, we can go all the way down. We got the prettiest district in the state. We really, truly do. I tell you what, there are so many people that are so envious that we have an opportunity to live in this district. I want to preserve that, and I want to be the person that you would in Lansing that works for you, carries your voice, and I would appreciate your vote on November 8th.
Thank you. And Mr. Scripps, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm happy to defer.
No. 2 minutes and longer if you want.
Yeah. I'm really running because I think we're at a point where we've seen what happens when government focuses on narrow ideological agendas and just a total focus on the balance sheet and forgets that this is ultimately supposed to be about the people in our state and in our communities. And I'm running because I want to create a government that puts people first. I want to represent the people of Northwest Michigan and make sure that our unique voices, our priorities, our values are heard in Lansing. And I think that that's important if we're going to do things in a way that creates jobs and growing industries and gets our kids the opportunity to stay here and prosper, that supports our local schools and understands that there is an issue in school funding that needs to be addressed in order to make sure our kids get the same opportunities as kids downstate, that protects the Great Lakes and preserves our outdoor traditions and our quality of life here in Northwest Michigan, and ultimately builds a government that's open and accountable and serves the people that it's designed to serve. So I think that all of those things, there are particular unique things about representing this district in Northwest Michigan and the people who live here that need to be addressed and need to be heard and recognized in Lansing. And that's really what gets me out of bed in the morning. But the other part of this is that we're at a point, I think, across the country where, you know, we've had this ongoing experiment in democracy of represent, you know, sending people to represent us in state governments and in Washington, and it's under strain. People are giving up on it. They say it's totally broken and it cannot be fixed. And the most idealistic people I know are going to business school instead of pursuing a life and giving back to their community. And I was raised in a family, my parents are here today, that said each of us has a responsibility to try and make life better for the next generation, for our communities. And one of my brothers is a cop downstate, another served in the Peace Corps, And this is where I see an opportunity to give back and hopefully find a way that this system works. It needs to, and it's on us to make sure that it does.
Wow. Okay. Nice. Very good. What? Yes, Kurt.
In my rush, I want to thank everybody for being here tonight, because we're trying to get done in the 2 minutes, and we want to respect your time. But I appreciate it.
That was my fault. I should have put the card away. Sorry.
I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for being here and listening. We may not always agree on everything, and we understand, but I'm glad you're here, that you gave up your evening, and I appreciate you for hosting this event, and thank you again.
Kurt speaks for both of us on that.
Well, I want to thank everybody out there. This was a very respectful night. Thank you very much. If we could have a hand for the candidates. Stood up there, shake hands. Thank you guys so much. And thanks for allowing us to host this. I've got a face for radio and a voice for newspapers, so I appreciate you putting up with that. On behalf of David Castleman, who did an excellent job, thank you, everybody.